This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. If you have any topics that you'd like to hear me address or question about nutrition, wellness, how to nutritionally treat a symptom, a medical condition, email me. You can reach me at radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. So, here we are, it's the end of December. We're getting onto a new year. And I'm going to talk about New Year's resolutions at some point, but I think I've got some more important info here. Let's see. Here's an article. It says, low prenatal red meat intake tied to kids' substance misuse. Let me read that again. Low prenatal red meat intake tied to kids' substance misuse. Eating little or no red meat during pregnancy has been linked to substance use in offspring in new research findings. Wow, you're probably thinking that's quite a reach. Let me read on. The cohort study of more than 5,000 adolescents showed that children of mothers who consumed less red meat during pregnancy were at significantly greater risk for alcohol and tobacco use by the age of 15 years and were 2.5 times more likely to consume cannabis compared to their counterparts whose mothers ate meat daily while pregnant. So they looked at a study of 5,000 adolescents and they found that they were at a significantly greater risk for using alcohol and tobacco by age 15 and then 2.5 more times more likely to use marijuana compared to their counterparts whose mothers ate meat on a daily basis while pregnant. I wonder if they got that information via a food frequency questionnaire. Anyway, the investigators led by Dr. Joseph R. Hiblin, and I talked about him, he was actually involved in another study that I discussed in last week's podcast about vegetarianism being tied to depression, if you remember. Same doctor, Joseph Hiblin, acting chief of the section on nutritional neurosciences at the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the National Institutes of Health, the NIH, note that the interaction shown between a particular gene called the transcobalamin 2 gene, the TCN2 gene, and meat consumption implicate vitamin B12 deficiencies. Interesting. So there has to be possibly a predisposition here with the transcobalamin 2 gene. Quote, we thought that fish would protect the kids from substance use problems, but we are wrong. It was when mothers ate more red meat. That protected the children when they were teenagers in a dose response pattern for substance use, which was surprising. And we were able to validate that using a technique, we were able to validate that using a technique of looking at variants in the transporter for vitamin B12. So you have to have a certain genetic SNP or a mutation that's actually a variant that's actually going to impact the transporter for vitamin B12. And these findings were published online in October in Alcoholism, Clinical and Experimental Research. The journal, again, in October 9 to be exact, it was published online in Alcoholism, Clinical and Experimental Research. So, is there a role for B12 supplementation? They say vegetarian dietary patterns are associated with improved health outcomes among adults and, in addition, have strong ethical imperatives, including promotion of sustainability, food security, reducing industrialized production of animals, the investigators note. Okay, yes, that's possible. But I say, if I may interject, at the end of the day, am I going to choose my ideology or my health? And I think I'm going to choose my health. That said, however, they also point out that avoidance of nutrient-dense meats can decrease intake of cobalamin, iron, omega-3 fatty acids, selenium, and zinc, particularly in young women of childbearing age. And that does bear out in other research that vegetarianism can cause deficiencies of these particular nutrients. And even, you know, when I was a dietetic intern, or even as an undergrad before becoming a dietetic intern, we had to look out for these red flags of in vegetarianism of being low in certain micronutrients like B12 and iron, selenium and zinc, and certainly then other nutrients I found out later like carnitine, CoQ10. You're not necessarily finding those in vegetables, but more in meat. So, of course, they conclude that inadvertent nutritional deficiencies during pregnancy may result in residual neurodevelopmental harms to the offspring. So, the population-based Avon longitudinal study of parents and children, all SPAC, again, I'm referencing this particular study, which I referenced in my podcast last week, enrolled 14,541 pregnant women who lived in the United Kingdom and whose expected dates of delivery were between April 1991 and December 1992. They all filled out a food frequency questionnaire. Now, listen, a caveat we know in scientific research in using the food frequency questionnaire. How would you remember, for example, if you were to be given, say you're a subject in a study and you're given a food frequency questionnaire and they're asking you over the last 5 years or 10 years, how much meat did you eat or something? Now, with pregnant women, that time span is shorter, 9 months. There will be more recall on something like that. So maybe it merits a little more trust in this matter or integrity in terms of using an FFQ, because you would imagine that pregnant women may remember better how they're eating, not just because of the shorter span of time, which is pregnancy, as opposed to many years of having to remember what you ate, but also being more vigilant about what you're consuming when you're pregnant, because you want to eat right, right? Especially when you're pregnant. So, all filled out the FFQ, the food frequency questionnaire. And then the TCN2 genotyping was conducted, right? That particular SNP, that gene, the transcobalamin 2 gene, was conducted, the genotyping was conducted, and biomarkers of iron status were measured. For the current analysis, the researchers assessed 5,109 offspring who were about 15 years of age at the time of a clinic visit. The adolescents were asked via electronic questionnaire about current substance use. Results showed no significant associations between the three substance use outcomes, and those outcomes being alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana use, and traditional processed or confectionery maternal dietary patterns. Interesting. So, however, vegetarianism was associated with all three adverse outcomes. And then they're giving us an odds ratio and so forth, statistical measurements here. The risks were greater specifically for low prenatal meat consumption, which included consumption of red meat, poultry, and meat products combined. Quote, given the likelihood of residual confounding, potential causality was evaluated using stratification for maternal allele variants that impact the biological activity of cobalamin, vitamin B12, and iron, report the investigators. So, lower meat consumption disproportionately increased the risks of offspring substance misuse among mothers with optimal functional variants of the TCN2 gene. Wow. So those mothers who had the gene, which wasn't going to behave well with their B12 status, to make a long story short, lower meat consumption increased the risk of offspring substance misuse. Very interesting. Iron metabolism variants in the mothers were not significantly associated with their offspring substance use. In identifying B12 insufficiencies as highly likely to have a contributing role to our findings, say the authors, greater meat consumption need not be advised to modify risk, they say. Instead, using supplements or vegetarian sources of cobalamin may be low-cost and readily feasible interventions. Absolutely. Listen, I have clients who are going to be vegetarian no matter what. I need to conform with what their needs are. This doesn't become a power struggle of who's right and who's wrong. That's not what this is about at the end of the day. My responsibility as a practitioner is to make sure that my client, my patient, can have the best outcome, health outcome possible. And of course, in the setting of vegetarianism, we need to add supplementation to make sure that they're not going to suffer micronutrient deficiencies, and especially with pregnancy. So, now, Linda Ross, PhD, senior lecturer and clinical lead in nutrition and dietetics at Griffith University in Southport, Queensland, Australia, told Medscape Medical News that because this was an association study, it is difficult to draw firm conclusions. You know, a lot of scientific research is not all about causation. That has to be randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled, all of this. But not all is an RCT, a randomized controlled trial. So these conclusions are more about association and not causation. And that's why Dr. Linda Ross says it's difficult to draw firm conclusions. She says there are so many relationships and other lifestyle factors that can be involved, and they're so intertwined. So I'm always interested in what other factors might be associated with it, says Dr. Ross. Types of activities, exercise status, and possible substance use in the mothers are things that could have played a part in the outcomes. So she says, I'm a bit wary when there is a focus on one food item rather than comments on lifestyle aspects. That's true. It's not all about what we put on our pie hole. It's not necessarily all about what they ate, but what was their lifestyle? What were their activities? Was there possible substance use amongst the mothers? These are all points to investigate. So, Dr. Ross noted that the idea of B12 deficiency may play a part in the findings is really a good suggestion. And that's because previous research has shown that individual nutrients, especially omega-3 fatty acids, can switch particular genes on and off, depending on how much is in the diet. That's true, because switching those genes on and off has to do with how we process those fats, whether we're getting enough of them in the diet or not, and how our desaturase pathways, our biochemistries, are dealing with the fats that are available, not available, and the genes being turned on and off. So, she says, it could be a number of factors in meat or in the diet overall that might affect a gene. But I don't think we know enough about those directions to be sure, she said. And these types of association studies are important because they raise questions and focus our attention so that we can then test in another type of study design the things that we pick up on. So again, association does not mean causation. I want to bring up another point in this, in some other research, gum disease tied to yet another deadly illness. For those who are not taking care of your teeth and gums, please listen up. Periodontal disease, in and of itself, gum disease, inflammation, translates to inflammation in your body, particularly in your blood vessels. These may be risk factors for coronary artery disease. Now, add one more reason to why you should brush and floss regularly. Gum disease can happen at any age. However, as we get older, and if we want to age healthy, it's important to pay more attention to our teeth and gums. The correlation to cancers is not that surprising, just as the many other diseases associated with gum disease. The fact as we age, our immune systems weaken, only make paying attention to our mouth that much more important, says Dr. Ronald Klatz, the president of A4M, the anti-aging particular organization. Add one more reason to why you should brush and floss regularly. Gum disease bacteria are now tied to higher odds of esophageal cancer. The study tracked the oral health of 122,000 Americans for 10 years. It found that the presence of two types of bacteria linked with gum disease may hike the risk of cancer. Now, this was done at NYU Langone Health in New York City. The presence of one oral bacterium in particular called Tannerella forsythia was tied to a 21% increase in the odds of developing esophageal tumors. Gum disease has already been linked in numerous studies to a heightened risk of the number one killer, heart disease, as I said earlier. But an expert in esophageal cancer who reviewed the new findings stressed that researchers can't yet prove a causal link to esophageal tumors. What is not clear is whether the presence of these bacteria or the resultant periodontal disease is primarily responsible for the development of cancer. Still, these specialists believe that we should consider a proper evaluation of the oral cavity as well as the remainder of the digestive tract in the hope of early diagnosis of esophageal cancer. Esophageal cancer is the 8th most common cancer and the 6th leading cause of cancer death worldwide. Because it's often only diagnosed in an advanced stage, 5-year survival rates are between 15 and 25%. So esophageal cancer is a highly fatal cancer, and there's an urgent need for new avenues of prevention, risk stratification, early detection. So now, the news from the study wasn't all bad because, you know, if you have a good microbiome, a healthy microbiome, remember that there's a such thing as good bacteria that includes in the mouth. Therefore, the investigators found that some types of mouth bacteria were associated with lower risk of esophageal cancer. So learning more about the bacteria communities living naturally in the mouth may potentially lead to strategies to prevent esophageal cancer, or at least identify it at its earlier stages. So, the study suggests that there are some oral bacteria that may contribute to the development of this highly deadly cancer, but also, and very importantly, suggests that some bacteria may provide a protective effect. Knowing which bacteria are good and which are bad could lead to preventive treatments and serve as risk of development of this type of cancer. So, good oral health, regular toothbrushing, dental visits can help protect against gum disease and the health conditions associated with it. These study findings were published December 1 in the journal Cancer Research. All right. So, another reason for healthy teeth and gums. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.